Welcome back to your journey through the magnificent Palazzo Pitti. We're thrilled to have you with us again for the second part of our audio guide, brought to you by EU Tours. In this tour, we'll explore three fascinating sections of the palace, each offering a unique perspective on history, art, and culture. First, we'll step into the Museum of Fashion and Costumes, where centuries of style and craftsmanship come to life through exquisite garments, accessories, and textiles. This collection isn't just about fashion. It's a reflection of changing societies, artistic expression, and the evolution of beauty and status. Next, we'll visit the Gallery of Modern Art, housed in the upper floors of the palace. Here, we'll dive into the world of Italian art from the late 18th century to the early 20th century, where neoclassical elegance, romanticism, and the birth of modern artistic movements take center stage. Finally, we'll uncover the splendor of the Treasury of the Grand Dukes, also known as the Silver Museum. This collection showcases breathtaking jewels, decorative objects, and precious treasures once owned by the ruling dynasties of Florence, including the Medici and Lorraine families. Each of these museums holds a unique piece of history, allowing us to step back in time and experience the luxury, creativity, and innovation that shaped European culture. Thank you once again for choosing EU Tours for your visit to Palazzo Pitti. We hope you enjoy this experience as we now step into the first section of our tour, the Museum of Fashion and Costumes. Let's begin. As you step into the first room of the Museum of Fashion and Costumes, you are immediately transported into a pivotal era in fashion history, the transition from neoclassicism into the Restoration. This period, spanning the late 18th to the early 19th century, reflects not only changing aesthetic preferences but also deep societal shifts, political upheavals, and evolving ideals of beauty and status. At the end of the 18th century, neoclassical fashion emerged as a reaction against the extravagant and highly decorative styles of the Rococo period. Influenced by the rediscovery of ancient Greek and Roman art, this new aesthetic celebrated purity, simplicity, and natural beauty. Women's gowns became ethereal and fluid, with high waistlines just below the bust, a hallmark of the empire silhouette. Made from lightweight fabrics such as fine muslin, silk, or gauze, these gowns draped elegantly over the body, mirroring the tunics of ancient statues. Pastel shades, particularly white, were favored, as they symbolized virtue, refinement, and a rejection of the excesses of the ancien regime. However, this newfound simplicity was not without its own luxurious touches. Embroidered hems, delicate lace, and intricate floral or classical motifs added sophistication to these garments. Accessories played a key role in defining the look of the period. Long, sheer shawls inspired by Greco-Roman attire, delicate gloves, and Grecian-style sandals completed the ensemble. Hairstyles, too, followed the classical influence, with women arranging their hair in soft curls or elaborate updos reminiscent of ancient sculptures, often adorned with headbands, diadems, or pearls. For men, fashion also underwent a dramatic transformation. The extravagant, embroidered silk coats and breeches of the 18th century were gradually replaced by a more refined and sober style, influenced by English tailoring. The introduction of tail coats, waistcoats, and trousers gave rise to a silhouette that would eventually define menswear for the next century. Dark, muted colors became more prevalent, emphasizing elegance and restraint rather than ostentation. The cravat, a predecessor of the modern tie, became an essential accessory, often tied in elaborate knots that reflected the wearer's sophistication. But as we move into the early 19th century and the Restoration period, fashion begins to shift once more, reflecting the political and social changes brought about by the fall of Napoleon and the return of European monarchies. With the restoration of the Bourbon dynasty in France and the reestablishment of aristocratic rule across Europe, clothing became a tool for reinforcing status and tradition. The elegant simplicity of the empire style gradually gave way to a more structured, decorative approach. For women, corsets made a strong comeback, once again shaping the body into a defined hourglass silhouette. Skirts became fuller and heavier, often featuring multiple layers of fabric, elaborate pleats, and rich embellishments. The sleeves of gowns grew increasingly voluminous, particularly in the jigot or leg of mutton style, which featured dramatic puffed shoulders that tapered down to a fitted wrist. Luxurious fabrics such as velvet, brocade, and heavy silk replaced the light muslins of the previous era, and darker, jewel-toned colors, deep reds, emerald greens, and royal blues, became fashionable, symbolizing wealth and prestige. Men's fashion, too, reflected this return to formality. The fitted tailcoat remained a staple, but cuts became sharper, lapels wider, and embellishments more pronounced. Waistcoats were often richly decorated with embroidery or patterned fabrics, and cravats were tied in increasingly intricate styles, sometimes starched to achieve dramatic, almost sculptural shapes. The figure of the dandy emerged, with men such as Beau Brummel, a legendary English trendsetter, advocating for perfectly tailored, understated elegance. His influence solidified the importance of precise tailoring, impeccable grooming, and restrained sophistication in menswear. This room beautifully captures the essence of a time when clothing was not merely a means of covering the body, but a statement of identity, ideology, and social standing. As you examine the garments displayed before you, take a closer look at the fine details, the intricate stitching, hand-sewn embellishments, and luxurious textiles that speak to the craftsmanship of the period. Each piece tells the story of the people who wore them, the ideals they embraced, and the world they inhabited. Now, as we move forward, we will witness yet another transformation in style, as the opulence of the Restoration period gives way to the romantic, dramatic fashions of the mid-19th century. Let's continue our journey through the evolution of fashion. As you step into the next room of the Museum of Fashion and Costumes, you are immediately immersed in the world of the Romantic era, a period that saw fashion infused with drama, emotion, and a heightened sense of individuality. Spanning the early to mid-19th century, this era was heavily influenced by the ideals of Romanticism, an artistic and literary movement that celebrated nature, history, and personal expression. Clothing became more extravagant, silhouettes more dramatic, and embellishments more intricate as fashion mirrored the era's fascination with storytelling, historical nostalgia, and national identity. For women, the defining feature of Romantic fashion was the silhouette, marked by extremely voluminous sleeves, a narrow, corseted waist, and full skirts that added an air of delicate elegance. The gigot or leg of mutton sleeves, which began modestly in the 1820s, expanded to exaggerated proportions by the 1830s. These enormous, puffed sleeves were balanced by tightly cinched corsets that emphasized an exaggerated contrast between the upper body and the waist. Skirts grew wider, often adorned with layers of flounces, ruffles, and embroidery, creating a highly decorative and theatrical effect. The fabrics of the Romantic era reflected this love for rich detailing. Silk, satin, and velvet were popular choices, often dyed in deep, dramatic colors such as burgundy, sapphire blue, and forest green. Patterns also played a key role. Floral motifs, intricate lacework, and brocades added texture and visual depth. Accessories became essential elements of a woman's ensemble, with delicate bonnets adorned with ribbons and flowers, long gloves, and beaded reticules, small handbags, completing the look. Hairstyles followed suit, often styled into elaborate braids and curls, sometimes adorned with pearls or decorative combs. Men's fashion, while less extravagant, also reflected the themes of Romanticism. The fitted tailcoat remained a staple, but waistcoats became more ornate, featuring elaborate embroidery and rich fabrics. Cravats were often tied in voluminous, almost sculptural knots, emphasizing a refined, poetic aesthetic. The overall look was dashing yet melancholic, reminiscent of the brooding heroes found in Romantic literature. The figure of the dandy, a well-dressed gentleman who valued elegance and refinement, became an icon of the time, embodying the Romantic spirit through impeccable tailoring and dramatic flair. As the Romantic period transitioned into the mid-19th century, fashion began to take on a more nationalistic character, particularly in Italy, where political movements were shaping the country's future. This brings us to the next crucial phase in fashion history, the unification of Italy. The unification of Italy, or Risorgimento, was not just a political movement. It was also reflected in the way Italians dressed. Clothing became a symbol of national pride, and fashion played a role in reinforcing a sense of unity and identity among the Italian people. During this time, the influence of military aesthetics became more pronounced, especially in men's fashion. Military-style jackets, epaulets, and structured tailoring became increasingly popular, as the heroic figures of the Risorgimento, such as Giuseppe Garibaldi, became cultural icons. One of the most significant fashion pieces associated with this era is the Garibaldi shirt, a red woolen shirt famously worn by Garibaldi and his soldiers. This simple yet bold garment became a symbol of revolutionary spirit and resistance, eventually influencing civilian fashion as well. Women, too, embraced patriotic styles, incorporating the colors of the Italian flag, green, white, and red into their attire, whether through embroidery, ribbons, or accessories. Beyond its symbolic meaning, fashion in this period also became more practical. Industrialization allowed for the mass production of textiles, making elegant clothing more accessible to a broader range of society. The invention of the sewing machine revolutionized garment construction, enabling more intricate detailing while reducing the time required to create elaborate designs. The rigid corsetry and extravagant skirts of the Romantic era gradually evolved into a more structured yet refined style, paving the way for the crinoline gowns that would dominate the latter half of the century. As you walk through this room, take a closer look at the garments on display. Observe the meticulous hand-stitched embroidery, the luxurious textures of velvet and silk, and the subtle yet powerful ways in which fashion reflected the dramatic social and political changes of the time. Every detail tells a story, whether it's the delicate lacework of a Romantic gown or the bold simplicity of a Garibaldi shirt, both of which represent the passions, ideals, and aspirations of an era in transformation. Now, as we move forward, we will witness yet another evolution of style. As Italy fully embraces modernity, industrial progress, and a shift towards more structured and opulent designs, let's continue our journey through the fascinating world of fashion. As you step further into the Museum of Fashion and Costumes, you enter a period of striking transformation, the 1870s and 1880s. This was an era of industrial progress, social refinement, and dramatic shifts in fashion. The grand, voluminous styles of the mid-19th century evolved into sleeker, more structured silhouettes, reflecting the increasing influence of industrialization, technological advancements in textile production, and a society that was becoming more modern and cosmopolitan. During the 1870s, one of the most defining features of women's fashion was the bustle, a padded structure worn under the skirt at the back to create a pronounced curve. Unlike the wide, circular crinolines of previous decades, which expanded the skirts outward in all directions, the bustle pushed the volume towards the rear, emphasizing an elongated and sculptural profile. This created an exaggerated hourglass silhouette, where the fullness of the skirt was balanced by a tightly corseted waist and a fitted bodice. Dresses became more form-fitting, with complex drapery, layers of pleated fabric, and decorative elements such as bows, fringes, and elaborate embroidery cascading down the back. The emphasis was on elegance, structure, and refinement, with deep jewel tones like emerald green, ruby red, and sapphire blue dominating the palette. For evening wear, gowns were made from luxurious fabrics like silk taffeta, satin, and velvet, often embellished with beaded embroidery or lace appliques. High collars and long sleeves remained popular for day wear, while evening dresses featured off-the-shoulder or low-cut bodices, designed to showcase delicate lacework and intricate trimmings. Accessories such as long gloves, feathered fans, and elaborate hats adorned with flowers, ribbons, and even taxidermy birds completed the look. Men's fashion in the 1870s and 1880s maintained a structured, refined aesthetic with fitted frock coats, waistcoats, and the increasingly popular morning coat, which was shorter at the front and tapered into long tails at the back. The three-piece suit, consisting of a matching jacket, trousers, and waistcoat, became a staple of formal menswear, establishing a foundation for modern tailoring. Hats were essential for any well-dressed gentleman, with the top hat remaining a symbol of sophistication, while the more casual bowler hat gained popularity among the working and middle classes. As you move towards the Belle Époque section of the museum, you step into an era of glamour, extravagance, and unparalleled artistic refinement. Spanning from the 1890s to the early 1910s, the Belle Époque, or Beautiful Era, was a time of immense cultural and technological progress. With the advent of electricity, mass transportation, and the rise of leisure culture, fashion reached new heights of opulence and creativity, particularly among the elite. Women's fashion during the Belle Époque was characterized by S-curve silhouettes, a result of the Gibson girl ideal that emphasized a rounded, full bust, a tiny waist, and gently sloping hips. This effect was achieved through the S-bend corset, which pushed the chest forward and tilted the hips back, creating an exaggeratedly feminine posture. Skirts were long and flowing, often flaring out into elaborate trains, while blouses featured high necklines, lace details, and puffed sleeves. Evening gowns became dazzling works of art, with intricate beadwork, shimmering sequins, and lavish embroidery that sparkled under the glow of electric lights. The Belle Époque also marked the golden age of haute couture, with designers such as Charles Frederick Worth revolutionizing fashion by introducing seasonal collections and made-to-measure garments for the aristocracy and upper classes. Fabrics became lighter and more fluid, with delicate chiffon, lace, and organza replacing the heavy brocades of previous decades. Hats became larger and more extravagant, adorned with ribbons, feathers, artificial flowers, and even entire birds, reflecting the era's love for theatricality and excess. One of the most remarkable aspects of Belle Époque fashion was the increasing role of sports and leisure in daily life. With the expansion of railways and seaside resorts, more women engaged in activities like cycling, tennis, and seaside promenades, leading to the development of more practical yet stylish clothing. Walking suits, featuring tailored jackets and long skirts, allowed for greater mobility, while bathing costumes, often made from dark wool to maintain modesty, became an essential part of the modern wardrobe. For men, the Belle Époque introduced a greater emphasis on sleek, sophisticated tailoring. The morning coat remained popular for formal occasions, while the lounge suit, a precursor to the modern business suit, became a practical choice for daily wear. Neckties and cravats gave way to the four-in-hand tie, similar to today's standard necktie, and shoes became more streamlined, with the emergence of Oxfords and two-tone spectator shoes for casual occasions. This period also saw the growing influence of art movements on fashion, particularly Art Nouveau, with its flowing lines, floral motifs, and organic shapes inspiring both textiles and jewelry design. The Belle Époque was an era of optimism and indulgence, where fashion reflected the joy, innovation, and elegance of a society at its peak, just before the world would be forever changed by the events of the First World War. As you take in the stunning garments of this era, note the craftsmanship, the detailed embellishments, and the fluidity of the designs. Each piece represents not only the height of luxury, but also the evolving role of fashion in a rapidly modernizing world. Now, as we move forward, we will witness yet another transformation in style, the arrival of the 20th century, where fashion would undergo some of its most radical and revolutionary changes yet. Let's continue our journey. As you step further into the Museum of Fashion and Costumes, you come face to face with an extraordinary collection of personal belongings that once belonged to members of the powerful Medici family. This section offers an intimate glimpse into the daily lives, tastes, and status symbols of Don Garcia de Medici, Eleonora di Toledo, and Cosimo I de Medici, three key figures who helped shape the grandeur and influence of the Medici dynasty. First, let's turn our attention to Don Garcia de Medici, the son of Cosimo I and Eleonora di Toledo. Though he died young, his personal effects give us insight into the upbringing and refinement of Medici princes. Among the displayed items, you'll notice finely embroidered garments, richly adorned with gold thread and intricate patterns, symbols of his noble status. These clothes were not just for fashion. They were political statements, showcasing the power and wealth of the Medici family. His childhood armor is also on display, a stunning miniature suit of armor crafted to prepare him for the expectations of a nobleman trained in warfare and leadership from a young age. The craftsmanship, from the delicately engraved breastplate to the finely articulated joints, reflects the Renaissance ideal of merging beauty with function. Moving on, we find the personal belongings of Eleonora di Toledo, one of the most influential women of the 16th century and a symbol of power, elegance, and sophistication. She was not only the wife of Cosimo I, but also a trendsetter who helped shape the court fashion of Florence. Her exquisite gowns, many of which were designed from the finest Florentine silks, are preserved with extraordinary detail. One of the most famous pieces associated with her is a velvet ceremonial dress, adorned with intricate gold embroidery and pearls. The richness of the fabric, combined with the precision of the embroidery, highlights the importance of textile production in Renaissance Florence, an industry largely controlled by the Medici. Beyond her clothing, you'll see personal items such as bejeweled hairpieces, ornate gloves, and delicate fans, each meticulously crafted. These objects were not merely decorative but played an important role in courtly etiquette. Her prayer book, bound in precious leather and illuminated with gold leaf, offers a more personal look into her piety and devotion, reinforcing her role as a virtuous and cultured ruler. Finally, we arrive at the possessions of Cosimo I de' Medici, the Grand Duke of Tuscany and a ruler who transformed Florence into a powerful Renaissance state. Among the most remarkable objects on display is his personal armor, a masterpiece of Renaissance craftsmanship. Unlike standard battle armor, Cosimo's was richly engraved with mythological and heraldic motifs, designed to project his image as a warrior ruler in the tradition of ancient Rome. The detailing depicting scenes of conquest, strength, and divine protection reinforces the Medici claim to power. Alongside his armor, we find beautifully crafted weapons, including ceremonial swords and daggers with engraved hilts and gemstone inlays. These were not merely tools of war, but also objects of prestige, symbolizing Cosimo's authority and military prowess. Additionally, you'll notice his personal writing instruments, wax seals, and official documents, giving us a glimpse into the administrative side of his rule. These artifacts reveal Cosimo not only as a statesman and strategist, but also as a patron of the arts, deeply involved in the governance and cultural flourishing of Florence. This section of the museum provides an extraordinary opportunity to step into the world of the Medici rulers, offering a tangible connection to their lives, ambitions, and legacy. As we move forward, we will explore more treasures that continue to tell the story of this influential family and the impact they left on fashion, politics, and art. Let's continue our journey. As we move through the Museum of Fashion and Costumes, we now step into the early years of the 20th century, a time of radical social and cultural transformation that was deeply reflected in fashion. The rigid, corseted silhouettes of the Belle Époque were beginning to give way to more fluid, practical styles, as women's roles in society started to evolve. The early 1900s were still defined by a sense of refinement and luxury, but there was an increasing shift towards comfort and movement, setting the stage for some of the most dramatic changes in fashion history. One of the most defining trends of this period was the S-bend corset, also known as the health corset. Unlike the tightly cinched hourglass corsets of the late 19th century, this new style pushed the chest forward and the hips back, creating an exaggerated S-shaped silhouette. This look, popularized by designers like Paul Poiret and Lucille, Lady Duff Gordon, emphasized feminine curves while allowing for slightly more ease of movement. Day dresses featured high lace collars, puffed sleeves, and narrow waists, often adorned with delicate embroidery and beadwork. Skirts remained long, but instead of heavy, layered petticoats, they were draped more softly, allowing for a more natural flow. For evening wear, luxurious gowns crafted from silk, chiffon, and satin remained in fashion, often decorated with sequins, pearls, and delicate lace trimmings. The Gibson girl look, a vision of beauty characterized by an elegant, confident woman with softly waved hair pinned high, dominated the era's aesthetic. Hats were still large and elaborate, decorated with feathers, ribbons, and floral embellishments, reinforcing the idea that headwear was an essential part of a woman's outfit. Men's fashion during the early 20th century remained fairly traditional, with three-piece suits continuing to be the standard. However, the frock coat, which had long been a staple of formal wear, was gradually being replaced by the morning coat and the more practical lounge suit. The boater hat became a popular accessory, giving a slightly more relaxed and modern look. As we transition into the 1910s and the first two decades of the 20th century, fashion begins to undergo even more dramatic changes, influenced by global events, artistic movements, and a growing demand for practical clothing. The outbreak of World War I, 1914 to 1918, played a crucial role in accelerating the decline of restrictive clothing, particularly for women. With many women entering the workforce and taking on roles traditionally held by men, there was a need for more functional, less restrictive attire. Corsets were gradually abandoned in favor of looser-fitting garments, and hemlines began to rise slightly, no longer sweeping the floor but stopping just above the ankles for easier movement. The hobble skirt, a narrow skirt that restricted movement, was briefly in vogue but was soon abandoned in favor of more practical styles. Paul Poiret, one of the most revolutionary designers of the era, introduced flowing, empire-waisted gowns that did away with corsetry altogether, embracing Orientalist influences and vibrant, exotic colors inspired by the ballet's russes. His designs, featuring tunics, kimono-style sleeves, and bold patterns, broke away from traditional European aesthetics, paving the way for modern fashion. The 1920s saw an even more dramatic break from the past. With the end of World War I, there was a strong desire for change, freedom, and self-expression. Women's fashion took on a more androgynous look, with the emergence of the flapper style, dropped waistlines, shorter skirts, and straight, boyish silhouettes that completely rejected the structured, feminine curves of previous decades. This era marked the beginning of the modern woman, independent, stylish, and unafraid to challenge conventions. Men's fashion, too, evolved in the post-war years. The stiff, formal styles of the previous century gave way to more relaxed, comfortable tailoring. Suits became softer and more loosely fitted, and sportswear-inspired styles began to appear. The tuxedo, which had been introduced in the late 19th century, became a key part of men's evening wear, while casual knitwear and lighter fabrics gained popularity for everyday attire. As we stand in this section of the museum, surrounded by garments that tell the story of these transformative years, take a moment to appreciate how fashion reflects the changing world. The early 20th century was a time of liberation, experimentation, and innovation, setting the stage for the radical styles of the decades to come. Now, as we move forward, we will explore the next phase of fashion history, where modernism takes center stage and the concept of style is redefined once again. As we continue our journey through the Museum of Fashion and Costumes, we now step into one of the most iconic and revolutionary decades in fashion history, the 1920s. This was the era of the flapper, a time of liberation, bold self-expression, and a complete rejection of the rigid styles of previous generations. For women, the 1920s marked the end of corsetry and the rise of a more androgynous silhouette. Gone were the restrictive hourglass figures of the past. Dresses now featured dropped waistlines, straight cuts, and shorter hemlines that allowed for ease of movement. The typical evening dress of this era was sleeveless, often adorned with beads, sequins, and fringes that shimmered and swayed with every step. The influence of Art Deco, with its geometric patterns and bold metallics, was evident in many of these designs, reflecting the modern, fast-paced energy of the time. The accessory room offers an exquisite display of the key fashion details that completed the look of the Roaring Twenties. One of the most striking pieces is the cloche hat, a close-fitting, bell-shaped hat that became the defining headwear of the decade. These hats were designed to be worn low on the forehead, often paired with the bob haircut, which was a daring symbol of independence for women. Jewelry from the 1920s took inspiration from Egyptian revival, following the discovery of Tutankhamun's tomb in 1922. Long, layered pearl necklaces, sapphire and emerald Art Deco brooches, and delicate diamond-encrusted bracelets reflect the era's love for opulence and luxury. The iconic tassel earrings, often featuring dangling beads or chains, were another essential part of a flapper's look, adding movement and elegance. Handbags became smaller and more decorative, with beaded evening purses and metal mesh bags taking center stage. And, of course, number 1920s ensemble was complete without the cigarette holder, an emblem of modern femininity and rebellion against traditional societal norms. For men, fashion in the 1920s shifted towards a more relaxed elegance. The stiff, formal styles of the previous decades gave way to wide-legged trousers, double-breasted jackets, and two-tone shoes that exuded effortless charm. The Panama hat and newsboy cap became popular accessories, reflecting the growing influence of casual wear. Now, as we move beyond the dazzling energy of the 1920s, we enter the interwar years, a period marked by both economic hardship and artistic innovation. The Great Depression of the 1930s had a profound effect on fashion. Luxury was no longer the main priority, and designers adapted to a more understated, practical style. Dresses became longer again, hemlines falling to mid-calf or even ankle length, while fabrics became simpler, often in muted colors. The bias cut dress, introduced by Madeleine Vionnet, became a hallmark of the decade, creating soft, body-hugging silhouettes that were both elegant and comfortable. Despite the hardships, Hollywood played a crucial role in shaping fashion trends during this period. The golden age of cinema brought forth glamorous movie stars like Marlene Dietrich and Greta Garbo, who inspired women to embrace sophisticated, tailored looks. The trench coat, wide-legged trousers, and tuxedo-style evening were all gained popularity among women, challenging traditional gender norms. For men, 1930s fashion refined the classic suit, introducing broader shoulders, wider lapels, and a more structured fit. Double-breasted jackets became the standard for formal wear, while suspenders and pocket squares added a touch of personality. The fedora hat became an essential accessory, completing the polished, yet effortlessly masculine look of the era. As we walk through this section of the museum, notice how fashion reflects the shifting moods of society. The 1920s were all about freedom and excess, while the interwar years brought practicality and refinement, shaped by economic reality and cinematic influence. Now, let's continue forward to explore the next transformative period, the dramatic and innovative styles of the 1940s and beyond. As we step into the next section of the Museum of Fashion and Costumes, we move beyond the hardships of war and into a time of renewal, optimism, and dramatic reinvention, post-war fashion. The aftermath of World War II brought not only economic and political shifts but also a revolution in the way people dressed. Fashion in the late 1940s and 1950s reflected a return to elegance, femininity, and luxury, after years of wartime rationing and practicality. One of the most defining moments of post-war fashion was the introduction of the new look by Christian Dior in 1947. This groundbreaking silhouette, characterized by a nipped-in waist, a full skirt, and an emphasis on an hourglass figure, was a direct reaction to the structured, utilitarian wartime styles. Fabrics became more abundant again, and the use of silk, tulle, and embroidered textiles gave new life to haute couture. This era saw the rebirth of Paris as the global capital of fashion, with designers such as Balenciaga, Givenchy, and Chanel shaping the aesthetic of the decade. For women, 1950s fashion was all about polished sophistication. Daywear consisted of tailored suits, pencil skirts, and fitted blouses, often accessorized with gloves and pearls. Evening wear was extravagant, with gowns that featured cinched waists, voluminous skirts, and intricate embellishments. Hairstyles were glamorous, structured curls and elegant updos completed the ultra-feminine look. Men's fashion also embraced a more refined style. Double-breasted suits, narrow ties, and sleek hairstyles became the standard for formal wear, while casual wear saw the rise of leather jackets, cuff jeans, and white t-shirts, thanks in part to cultural icons like James Dean and Marlon Brando. As we move forward into the 1960s and 1970s, we witness a complete break from tradition. Fashion becomes a statement of individuality, rebellion, and cultural change. The 1960s introduced a youthful and daring aesthetic, driven by the rise of street fashion, mod culture, and psychedelic influences. This was the era of the miniskirt, popularized by Mary Quant and geometric prints, inspired by op art and pop art. Designers like André Correges and Pierre Cardin embraced futurism, creating sleek, minimalist silhouettes with metallic fabrics, space-age boots, and clean lines. The late 1960s and early 1970s saw the explosion of hippie fashion, heavily influenced by counterculture movements, music festivals, and the growing call for freedom and self-expression. Flowing maxi dresses, flared pants, tie-dye shirts, and fringed vests became the uniform of an entire generation rejecting societal norms. Ethnic-inspired fashion, with embroidered tunics and bohemian prints, became hugely popular, reflecting the global influences of this era. For men, 1970s fashion embraced bold colors, wide lapels, and exaggerated silhouettes. The three-piece suit, often in earthy tones or velvet textures, became a signature look, while the disco movement introduced dazzling, sequined outfits and flared trousers. Now, as we transition into the 1980s and 1990s, fashion takes another dramatic turn, one that embraces excess, power, and self-expression in entirely new ways. The 1980s were defined by bold, oversized silhouettes, reflecting a culture of ambition, materialism, and technological advancement. Power dressing became essential, with women wearing shoulder-padded blazers, pencil skirts, and high heels, inspired by the rise of corporate culture and figures like Margaret Thatcher and Princess Diana. Meanwhile, the world of high fashion was dominated by luxury designers like Gianni Versace, Giorgio Armani, and Jean-Paul Gaultier, whose designs showcased vibrant colors, baroque patterns, and glamorous detailing. Athletic and streetwear brands such as Nike and Adidas also grew in influence as sportswear and casual fashion merged with high-end designs. For men, the 1980s brought boxy suits, pastel colors, and leather jackets, made famous by pop culture icons like Michael Jackson and Tom Cruise. Casual fashion saw the rise of acid-wash jeans, oversized sweaters, and sneakers, reflecting the laid-back yet bold aesthetic of the time. Then, as we move into the 1990s, fashion takes a pared-down, minimalist approach, rejecting the excess of the previous decade. The grunge movement, inspired by bands like Nirvana and Pearl Jam, introduced flannel shirts, ripped jeans, and combat boots, marking a shift towards effortless, anti-fashion styles. At the same time, the rise of supermodels like Naomi Campbell, Kate Moss, and Cindy Crawford saw the emergence of sleek, understated looks. Think slip dresses, simple tank tops, and low-rise jeans. For men, 90s fashion was a mix of relaxed, casual wear and urban street style. Baggy jeans, oversized hoodies, and baseball caps became the standard look, influenced by the growing popularity of hip-hop and skate culture. As we walk through these decades, notice how fashion is a reflection of society, from post-war elegance to rebellious youth movements, and from the high-powered excess of the 80s to the laid-back cool of the 90s. Now, let's continue our journey forward as we step into the 21st century and the world of contemporary fashion. As we near the end of our visit to the Museum of Fashion and Costumes, let's take a moment to appreciate one of the most important and forward-thinking figures in Italian fashion history, Rosa Giannone. Often referred to as the mother of Italian fashion, Giannone was one of the first to champion Italian craftsmanship in the fashion world, especially at a time when French designers dominated the global scene. A seamstress, designer, and advocate for the revival of traditional Italian textiles. Rosa Giannone played a pivotal role in shaping early 20th century Italian fashion. Her designs were grounded in a respect for Italian heritage, as she meticulously worked with traditional fabrics, such as wool, silk, and linen, to create elegant yet practical garments. Giannone's pieces showcased her dedication to quality craftsmanship and often incorporated intricate handwork, with delicate embroidery and beadwork. She was also known for promoting sustainability, creating garments that would stand the test of time both in style and construction. The dress we see on display is an example of her distinctive style, classic, timeless, and embodying a deep respect for Italian tradition, with a modern touch that was ahead of its time. Her commitment to preserving Italy's sartorial legacy helped lay the foundation for what would later become the Italian fashion revolution, paving the way for the likes of Giorgio Armani, Valentino, and Dolce & Gabbana. Today, Rosa Giannone is remembered as a trailblazer who influenced the course of fashion history, and her designs remain an inspiration for future generations. Now, as we turn the page towards the new millennium, fashion continues to evolve, embracing the intersection of technology, sustainability, and creativity. The 21st century brought a wave of digital transformation that impacted every aspect of the fashion industry. From the rise of social media influencers shaping trends in real time to the increasing importance of eco-conscious fashion and sustainable design practices, the early 2000s introduced a more casual, streetwear-influenced aesthetic, with logo-heavy clothing, oversized silhouettes, and athleisure becoming mainstream. Designers like Marc Jacobs, Alexander Wang, and Raf Simons redefined what high fashion could be, blending luxury with street sensibilities in groundbreaking collections. At the same time, the rapid rise of fast fashion made trends more accessible than ever, creating a cycle of constant innovation and change. By the 2010s, the fashion industry saw the increasing influence of technology. 3D printing, smart textiles, and virtual fashion shows became commonplace. Fashion was no longer just about clothes, it was about creating experiences. Sustainability began to take center stage as consumers and designers alike became more aware of the environmental impact of clothing production. Circular fashion emerged as a response to the growing desire for more ethical consumption, encouraging practices like upcycling, secondhand shopping, and the use of sustainable materials. As we approach today's fashion, we see an exciting blend of nostalgia and futurism, with designers constantly referencing past trends while pushing boundaries with new techniques and technologies. The fashion world has become more inclusive, embracing diversity and body positivity, and allowing for a greater range of identities and expressions to be celebrated. This brings our journey through the history of fashion to a close. From the revolutionary designs of the early 20th century to the bold, new ideas of today, fashion continues to be a reflection of society, constantly shifting, changing, and reinventing itself. We hope you've enjoyed this deep dive into the art of fashion, and that you leave with a greater appreciation for the craft and creativity that has shaped what we wear, and how we express ourselves throughout history. Thank you for choosing EU Tours to guide you through the Museum of Fashion and Costumes. We hope this experience has inspired you, and we invite you to continue exploring the rest of the Palazzo Pitti, with its stunning collection of art, history, and beauty. Enjoy the rest of your visit. As we enter the Galleria di Arte Moderna, we step into a rich period of art history that reflects the social, political, and cultural transformations of the modern age. The collection here spans from the late 18th century to the early 20th century, showcasing how Tuscany, and Italy more broadly, were affected by broader European movements and local dynamics. Our first stop focuses on the rise of neoclassicism in Tuscany, a style that was deeply rooted in the study and revival of the classical antiquity of Greece and Rome. This was a time when artists sought to return to the idealized forms of classical art, prioritizing symmetry, simplicity, and rationality. The influence of Enlightenment ideals, with its emphasis on reason, order, and morality, was evident in this movement, as artists believed that art should inspire virtuous behavior. As we move through the gallery, take note of the sculptures and paintings that illustrate this era. The neoclassical sculptures here reflect a keen interest in the human form, often drawing from ancient Greek and Roman motifs to evoke ideal beauty and nobility. Painters of the time, such as Giovanni Fattori and Silvestro Liga, were inspired by these classical ideals, while also capturing the unique atmosphere of Tuscany and the broader Italian peninsula. These works bridge the traditional aesthetics of classical antiquity with the emerging ideas of the modern era. By the late 18th century and early 19th century, however, French art began to assert its dominance across Europe, especially following the French Revolution. During this time, art became closely tied to political ideologies, and the French Academy became the standard for many artists, pushing the boundaries of artistic expression. The influence of the French Revolution itself is especially evident in the iconography of the time, which reflects both the tumultuous changes in society and the rise of nationalistic sentiments. As we move through the Galleria d'Arte Moderna, take note of the works that were inspired by the events of the French Revolution. Neoclassical figures such as Napoleon Bonaparte were often depicted as classical heroes, reinforcing his power and legitimacy as emperor. These images of revolutionary leaders helped shape the visual language of power and governance that resonated throughout Europe and beyond. The primacy of French art during the 19th century had a lasting impact on Italian artists, many of whom traveled to Paris to study at the Académie des Beaux-Arts. The French dominance of the art world also set the stage for the unification of Italy, as artists began to explore new ways of representing the evolving national identity. As you walk through this section, look for artworks that reflect the iconography of the pre-unification dynasties, including depictions of the House of Lorraine and later, the House of Savoy. These works often served as powerful symbols of both the ruling family's legitimacy and the growing national consciousness in Italy. The figures and portraits of the time showcase the increasing importance of nationalism and the visual representation of the state, a theme that would continue to evolve in Italian art as the country moved toward unification. The gallery offers a fascinating look at how art reflected the social and political changes of the time. From the neoclassical style that sought to revive the virtues of the classical world to the influence of French art in shaping modern European iconography, the works here provide a glimpse into the complex and dynamic world of 19th century art in Italy and beyond. As we continue our exploration of the Galleria d'Arte Moderna, we now move to a significant part of the collection that showcases the intersection of art, history, and the cultural changes of the 19th century, specifically focusing on the legacy of the Demidoff family in Florence and the evolution of restoration art during this period. The Demidoff family was a Russian noble family with strong ties to Florence, especially during the 19th century. Their wealth, derived from mining and industry, allowed them to play a significant role in the cultural and artistic life of the city. As collectors and patrons of the arts, they supported both local and international artists. Their presence in Florence helped elevate the city as a center for art and culture, particularly during the time when Tuscany was seeking to balance its rich artistic heritage with the new demands of modernity. The art of restoration also plays a central role in this period. With the rise of Romanticism and the growing interest in preserving the past, many artists and curators in Florence focused on restoring and conserving the works of the Renaissance and Baroque periods. This restoration movement not only sought to preserve these masterpieces for future generations, but also represented a deep respect for Italy's rich artistic heritage. Throughout the gallery, you may notice the growing trend of works that celebrate the past, not merely as subjects for artistic exploration, but as integral parts of Italy's national identity. Among these works, one key aspect is the emergence of Romantic painting with its distinct focus on historical genres. Romanticism, as a movement, was characterized by an emphasis on emotion, individualism, and the sublime, often drawing from national history, folklore, and the dramatic elements of the past. Historical genre painting, a key subgenre of Romanticism, depicted key moments from history, often with a heightened sense of drama and emotional intensity. This genre was an essential tool for artists to express the tension between the present and the past, capturing historical moments with a sense of grandeur and importance. As you walk through this section, look for paintings that explore Italian and European history, which highlight the narrative power of art in shaping collective memory and national identity. Now, let's turn our attention to one of the most remarkable features of the Galleria d'Arte Moderna, the ballroom, a room that captures the grandeur and elegance of a bygone era. Originally part of the Palazzo Pitti during the time of the Lorenzo de' Medici family, the ballroom was an essential space for social events and formal gatherings, reflecting the aristocratic culture of the time. As you look around, take note of the ornate design and architectural features that make this space stand out. The ceilings and walls, decorated with intricate frescoes and stuccos, reflect the Baroque style that was dominant during the Medici rule, showcasing both opulence and sophistication. The ballroom's design speaks volumes about the values and identity of the Medici family, whose patronage of the arts and culture helped shape Florence into a global center of art and power. The lavish details, including frescoes by renowned artists such as Giovanni di San Giovanni and John Gastone, depict mythological scenes and allegorical figures that communicate the grandeur and intellectual aspirations of the time. As you explore, note the gold accents, marble floors, and dramatic lighting, all of which serve to emphasize the ballroom's intended use as a site for both celebration and power. As an art form, the ballroom also represents something much larger. It is a reflection of the cultural and political dynamics of the time. The grandeur of the room, with its lavish decorations and attention to detail, was intended to demonstrate the wealth and influence of the ruling families, particularly the Medici, who used such spaces to reinforce their social status, political power, and connections with foreign elites. The ballroom was not just a space for dance. It was a venue for political negotiations, marriage alliances, and cultural exchanges, all conducted under the watchful eyes of the aristocracy. The ballroom in the Galleria d'Arte Moderna thus offers us a glimpse into an era of Florentine history when art, politics, and social life were intricately intertwined. By examining the room's architecture and decoration, we gain insight into the broader cultural and historical context that shaped Florence during its Renaissance and Baroque periods, and later into the Romantic era. As you continue through the museum, keep in mind the connection between these artworks, the political influence of figures like the Demidoff family and the Medici, and the way art shaped the public perception of power, culture, and history. Each room and painting you encounter reveals a piece of the larger story of how Florence became a beacon of artistic achievement and cultural exchange. As we move through the Galleria d'Arte Moderna, we now focus on the significant Cristiano Banti collection and its connection to the rise of naturalism in Italian art, a movement that played a pivotal role in shaping the future of modern painting. At the heart of this transformation is the figure of Diego Martelli, a prominent art critic and patron, who was instrumental in shaping the careers of many artists associated with naturalism and the Macchiaioli group. Cristiano Banti was one of the leading figures of the Macchiaioli, a group of artists who sought to break away from traditional academic styles and embrace a more direct, spontaneous approach to painting. The Macchiaioli were influenced by the realism movement in France, yet their work also drew heavily from the unique landscapes and light of Tuscany, using bold brushstrokes to capture the natural world with a fresh, almost experimental intensity. In the Cristiano Banti collection, you can see how the artist embraced this new form of painting, moving away from the polished, idealized depictions of the past and opting instead for scenes that were raw and immediate. His works often depict everyday life, showing the lives of ordinary people, such as rural laborers or quiet moments of domestic life, as opposed to the grand historical or mythological scenes that were typical of earlier periods. This shift in focus was revolutionary, as it signaled the artist's desire to represent reality, with all its imperfections and complexities. One key aspect of Banti's work is his mastery of light and shadow. Like many Macchiaioli artists, he used macchi, spots or patches, of light and color to convey the changing atmosphere and the fleeting moments of the natural world. His landscapes and genre scenes are often painted with a soft yet vibrant palette, allowing the viewer to feel the warmth of the sun or the coolness of the shade. There is an emphasis on light as a living force, shaping both the environment and the characters within it. Turning our attention to Diego Martelli, we see how his influence shaped the development of naturalism in Italy. Martelli was not only an art critic but also a key patron of the Macchiaioli movement, and he provided guidance and support to many of the group's most important artists. As a critic, Martelli argued that art should be based on the direct observation of nature, and that artists should reject the idealized representations that had dominated academic painting for centuries. His writings encouraged the artists of the Macchiaioli group to embrace an unsentimental, direct approach to their subjects, capturing the raw beauty and authenticity of everyday life. Under Martelli's influence, the artists began to explore realism in new ways, focusing not just on the appearance of nature, but on its emotional impact. Their work captured not only the external world, but also the internal world of their subjects, creating art that was not just visually accurate, but also deeply human. This shift in perspective allowed naturalism to thrive in Italy and laid the groundwork for later movements in art, such as Impressionism, which would further push the boundaries of how artists represent the world around them. In the Galleria d'Arte Moderna, the paintings from this period showcase the interplay between Banti's unique vision and the broader Macchiaioli movement. You will notice works that reflect a keen attention to the nuances of light, texture, and atmosphere. Whether it be a rural landscape, a scene of daily life, or a quiet domestic moment. Through these works, the artists convey a sense of truthfulness and intimacy, inviting the viewer to step into the world of the painting and experience it with all their senses. What makes the Cristiano Banti collection and the naturalism movement so important is that it marks a break from the past, with artists challenging long-held conventions and rethinking what art could represent. By rejecting idealized forms and embracing the raw beauty of the everyday world, the Macchiaioli set the stage for the future of modern art, influencing generations of artists who would continue to push the boundaries of visual representation. In these works, we see the early stirrings of modernism and a shift towards a more personal, humanistic approach to art. It's a profound evolution, from the grandiosity of the past to a more intimate, direct connection between the artist and the world around them. As you continue to explore the Galleria d'Arte Moderna, take a moment to reflect on the importance of these early artists and their pioneering role in shaping the future of Italian and European art. As you continue your exploration of the Galleria d'Arte Moderna, I'd like to point out a couple of rooms where you'll notice some fascinating shifts in artistic technique and style, particularly pointillism and symbolism, two movements that helped define the late 19th and early 20th centuries. In one of the rooms, you'll encounter works by artists who experimented with the technique of pointillism, a method closely associated with Georges Seurat and Paul Signac. This technique, also called divisionism, involves applying small, distinct dots of pure color to the canvas. When viewed from a distance, these dots blend together in the viewer's eye, creating a unified image. The beauty of pointillism lies in its precision and its scientific approach to color theory. The artists believed that this technique allowed for a more vibrant and luminous effect, bringing an intensity and liveliness to the scenes they depicted, whether landscapes, portraits, or urban scenes. As you walk through this part of the gallery, take your time to observe the way the colors blend and interact to form an image, and how the technique gives the works a sense of energy and movement. Adjacent to these works, you'll also find examples of symbolism, an artistic movement that emerged as a reaction against the realism and naturalism of the 19th century. Symbolism sought to explore the inner world of the human experience, dreams, emotions, and the spiritual realm through rich, symbolic imagery. Unlike the precise, observable world of naturalism, symbolism focused on the mysterious, the abstract, and the intangible. Artists used allegory, mythological references, and poetic symbols to convey ideas about the human condition, often infusing their works with a sense of mystery or melancholy. As you look at these pieces, you may notice dreamlike or fantastical scenes, evoking feelings of nostalgia, longing, or introspection, as well as an emphasis on the emotional power of color and form. Moving on from these two powerful movements, let's now focus on a key figure whose work deeply enriched the Galleria d'Arte Moderna, Emilio Gagliardini. Gagliardini was an important Italian artist whose contributions reflect the deep changes in art and culture during the late 19th and early 20th centuries. His work bridged the gap between realism and modernism, incorporating elements of both, while also exploring new ways to convey personal experience and emotion through his art. Gagliardini's approach was deeply influenced by the Macchiaioli group and their commitment to capturing the natural world, but his later works began to move away from the strict observance of nature, focusing more on the inner psychological world of his subjects. His use of color, brushstroke, and form began to convey not just the external world, but the mood and emotion of the scene. In this way, Gagliardini was able to merge realism with a more modern sensibility, offering a glimpse into the evolving style of the time. You'll notice in his works a rich use of color, a tendency towards vivid tones, and an emphasis on light and shadow, which were all crucial elements in the development of modern painting. His figures, whether human or landscape, are rendered with a sensitivity to light that gives them a luminous, almost ethereal quality. This technique, combined with his unique approach to color, gave Gagliardini's works a dynamic energy, a stark contrast to the more restrained compositions that dominated earlier periods. Take time to appreciate the way Gagliardini captures both the physical world and the emotional landscape. His paintings reveal not only the subject before him, but also his own internal response to that subject. This makes his work more than just a representation of reality. It is a reflection of how reality is felt and interpreted. Gagliardini's legacy lies in his ability to capture the tension between representation and emotional depth, making his work both a product of his time and a step toward the modernist experimentation that would follow in the 20th century. His contribution to the Galleria d'Arte Moderna allows us to explore the transformation of art in Italy as it moved from the traditions of the Macchiaioli towards the expressionist experimentation that defined the coming century. As we come to the end of your journey through the Galleria d'Arte Moderna, I'd like to highlight one final room that holds a significant place in both the museum and the cultural history of Florence, the Sala Bianca. The Sala Bianca, or the White Room, was originally designed to serve as a space for the exhibition of contemporary art. It was first created in the mid-20th century to house a series of temporary art exhibitions, showcasing both Italian and international artists. The room's clean, minimalistic design, dominated by white walls and a carefully controlled lighting scheme, was created with the express purpose of allowing the artworks themselves to be the focal point. By removing any distractions from the environment, the Sala Bianca provides a neutral, serene space where visitors can engage deeply with the art on display. This room also plays an important role in the museum's connection to the fashion world, as it is often used for exhibitions related to design and couture, creating a crossover between modern art and other artistic disciplines. The Sala Bianca has become an iconic venue for not only showcasing art, but also for celebrating Florence's rich heritage as a center for creativity and innovation. It's a space that symbolizes the ongoing evolution of Florence as a city that nurtures and promotes the arts in all their forms. Congratulations on completing your visit to the Galleria di Arte Moderna. You've just experienced the evolution of art in Tuscany and Italy from the 19th century to the early 20th century, exploring movements like naturalism, impressionism, and symbolism, as well as delving into the works of pivotal figures such as Cristiano Banti, Diego Martelli, and Emilio Gagliardini. Thank you once again for booking with EU Tours, and we hope you've enjoyed this exploration of the modern art collection. But don't stop here. Your tour isn't over yet, as we have Treasury of the Grand Dukes, one of the most remarkable and awe-inspiring collections housed within the Palazzo Pitti. This collection offers an exclusive glimpse into the wealth, power, and refined taste of the Medici family, who ruled Florence for centuries. As you step into this captivating section of the museum, you will be transported back to a time when luxury and opulence were not just symbols of status, but a way of life for the ruling elites. The Treasury of the Grand Dukes showcases a stunning variety of treasures, from precious jewels and goldsmithing masterpieces to rare artifacts and decorative objects, many of which were personally commissioned by the Medici to express their power and influence across Europe. As you explore the exhibits, you will see how the Medici used their immense wealth to build an unrivaled collection of exquisite craftsmanship and artistic innovation, all while displaying their connection to the highest circles of European royalty. Thank you for joining us today on this part of the tour, and we hope you enjoy discovering the fascinating objects that make up this extraordinary collection. Feel free to take your time as we begin this journey into the Treasury of the Grand Dukes, a space where history, luxury, and art converge. As you move through the Treasury of the Grand Dukes, you'll encounter several key rooms, each brimming with historical significance and showcasing some of the most valuable items from the Medici family's collection. Let's take a closer look at a few notable spaces. First, we enter the Sala di San Giovanni, a room that pays tribute to St. John the Baptist, the patron saint of Florence. This room is filled with objects of religious and ceremonial importance. As you explore, you'll notice the fine collection of liturgical vessels, chalices, and reliquaries, some of which were used during the Medici's religious observances and ceremonies. These pieces, often made of precious metals and adorned with intricate gemstones, reflect the Medici's deep ties to the Catholic Church, as well as their desire to display their wealth and piety. Next, you'll come to the Sala di Lorenzo il Magnifico, named after Lorenzo de' Medici, also known as Lorenzo the Magnificent, one of the most influential figures in the history of the Medici family. Lorenzo was a great patron of the arts and culture, and this room celebrates his contributions to the Renaissance. Here, you'll find items connected to his personal life and reign, including jewelry, medals, and other luxurious objects that highlight his status as a leading figure in the Italian Renaissance. Lorenzo's legacy is marked by his support for artists like Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, and Botticelli, and this room offers a glimpse into the personal treasures that he and his family accumulated over the years. As you move forward, the Sala della Gradacina presents a fascinating space, named after its distinct Gradacino, small cave, decorations. The room is filled with a collection of fine porcelain and decorative artifacts, reflecting the Medici's love for collecting and commissioning works of art from around Europe. The intricate details and opulence of the objects on display demonstrate the Medici's refined taste and their desire to showcase not only wealth but also cultural refinement and artistic innovation. Finally, we arrive at the Pinello di Cosimo, a section dedicated to Cosimo I de' Medici, the first Grand Duke of Tuscany. The Pinello is a magnificent panel that highlights Cosimo's reign and his influence on the development of Florence and Tuscany. Cosimo I's leadership was instrumental in strengthening the Medici's power in the region, and his wealth and authority are beautifully displayed through objects that bear his personal insignia. These treasures offer a deeper understanding of Cosimo's role in shaping the cultural and political landscape of Florence, making this space an essential part of the treasury of the Grand Dukes. As you journey through these rooms, you'll get a true sense of the grandeur and sophistication that characterize the Medici family and their rule over Florence, all while admiring the exquisite craftsmanship and artistic vision that were crucial to their legacy. As we continue our exploration of the treasury of the Grand Dukes, we now step into the Sala dell'Udienza Pubblica, or the Public Audience Hall. This room was the setting for official and ceremonial gatherings, where the Grand Duke would hold court, receive ambassadors, and meet with important figures of the time. It was a space designed to display the power and authority of the Medici dynasty, as well as to impress visitors with the grandeur of the Tuscan court. As you move through this room, take note of the lavish decorations, such as the ornate ceilings, frescoes, and the elegant furniture that serve as a reminder of the ceremonial significance of this space. The Sala dell'Udienza Pubblica is also a reflection of the Medici's approach to governance and diplomacy. The objects and artwork here were carefully chosen to project an image of power, wisdom, and culture, allowing the Grand Duke to communicate his influence not just through words, but also through the luxury and refinement that filled the room. From ceremonial swords to regal tapestries, every detail was designed to enhance the Medici's image as rulers of a wealthy and influential state. Next, we enter the Sala Privata, or the Private Audience Hall, which offers a more intimate yet equally impressive space. While the Sala dell'Udienza Pubblica was intended for public displays of power, the Sala Privata was reserved for more personal interactions, such as private meetings and informal audiences with trusted advisors or family members. This room still reflects the grandeur and elegance of the Medici family, but with a more restrained and personal atmosphere. The artwork and furnishings here give a sense of comfort and luxury, without the ostentation of the public rooms. The Sala Privata was where the Grand Duke could conduct more confidential matters, away from the eyes of courtiers and foreign dignitaries. You may notice the more intimate decor, the use of luxurious fabrics, portraits of family members, and smaller, detailed pieces of furniture. It provides a fascinating contrast to the public room, offering insight into the private lives of the Medici family. Finally, as we move on to the third stateroom, we encounter yet another majestic space that highlights the Medici's wealth and influence. The third stateroom was used for the most formal of occasions, often for receiving high-ranking dignitaries or for holding major celebrations and banquets. This room is perhaps one of the most richly decorated in the palace, with stunning frescoes, luxurious textiles, and an array of objects that communicate the Medici's political and cultural supremacy. The third stateroom demonstrates the height of the Medici's power and prestige during their rule over Tuscany. Every detail, from the grand paintings on the walls to the gold leaf accents and opulent chandeliers, was intended to leave a lasting impression on visitors. As you admire the room, you'll get a sense of the splendor and sophistication that define the Medici court and their role in shaping Florence as a center of art, politics, and culture in the Renaissance. Through these rooms, you can gain a deeper understanding of the Medici family's careful balance between public grandeur and private discretion, and how their spaces were designed to reflect both their authority and their cultural refinement. Now, as we reach the final rooms of the Treasury of the Grand Dukes, we'll take a moment to appreciate the Sala degli Avori e degli Reliquiari and the Sala dell'Ambra, both of which contain some of the most intricate and precious objects in the collection. In the Sala degli Avori e degli Reliquiari, you'll find a stunning assortment of ivory carvings, reliquaries, and other ceremonial objects that once belonged to the Medici family. The ivory pieces on display showcase the incredible craftsmanship of artists from across Europe and beyond, featuring detailed scenes and delicate figures that capture the high level of artistry of the period. The reliquaries, containers that were used to house sacred relics, are equally impressive, crafted with precious materials such as gold, silver, and enamel, often adorned with gemstones and intricate designs. These objects not only reflect the Medici's wealth and status, but also their deep connection to the Catholic faith and the importance they placed on religious devotion and ceremony. Next, we move into the Sala dell'Ambra, a room that showcases a stunning collection of amber artifacts. Amber, a fossilized tree resin, was highly prized for its warm color and natural beauty, and it was often used to create decorative pieces, jewelry, and luxury items. In this room, you'll encounter objects that demonstrate the Medici's refined taste and appreciation for natural beauty. The amber pieces in this room are displayed alongside other luxurious items, including some gilded objects and exquisite miniature sculptures. Each piece highlights the Medici's devotion to both fine craftsmanship and the natural world, and it is a testament to their role as great patrons of the arts and collectors of rare and beautiful materials. As you take in these last treasures, I encourage you to spend a moment observing the incredible detail and beauty of these artifacts. Feel free to appreciate the textures, colors, and artistry that make each piece unique. We've now come to the end of your visit to the Treasury of the Grand Dukes. On behalf of EU Tours, I want to thank you for joining us today and for exploring the Palazzo Pitti with us. We hope you enjoyed the experience and found the audio guides informative and enriching. If you've had a great time and found the tour helpful, we truly appreciate a review from the app where you booked. Your feedback helps us improve and helps future guests enjoy the same wonderful experience you had. Once again, thank you for choosing EU Tours. We hope you have a memorable time exploring Florence and all its magnificent cultural treasures. Goodbye, and we wish you all the best on the rest of your journey.